Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.podomatic.com. Hello everyone, it's time for Luke's English Podcast again. Now, let's get straight to the point. What's this episode about? Well, this one is about the King's Speech, the movie, The King's Speech. And you're going to listen to an interview about the film. And then I'm going to teach you some really useful phrases and idioms using the word mouth or the word tongue. Okay, now I'll explain that. That will become clear to you in due course. But for now, that's what you can expect. Interviews, like a genuine interview, authentic listening practice, and then some really useful idioms and phrases. Okay, right. Now, this episode is the first episode in a series of two about movies. The movies in question are The King's Speech and 127 Hours. Now, if you like films, if you follow movies, if you've been, for example, if you followed the Oscars ceremony this year, then you'll know that both of those films were nominated. The King's Speech won four awards, including an award for Best Director and another award for Best Actor. For Colin Firth, for his role as King George VI. 127 Hours didn't win any awards, which I was quite surprised about, because I thought it was a brilliant film. I really loved it. I loved The King's Speech as well, but I think that I preferred 127 Hours. Now, I'm going to talk about 127 Hours in the next episode, so I'll leave that until later. I'll talk about it a little bit here, but mainly I'm going to leave that till later. So now I think those two films actually have something in common. Obviously, they both they were both nominated at the Academy Awards this year, but also because both of those films feature stories about individuals who had to deal with very, very tough challenges in their lives. They're about acts of bravery and courage in the face of difficult challenges. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with the story for The King's Speech. I don't know if you've seen it. I saw The King's Speech. I got about an hour into the film before I realised it's not about a peach. Yeah, now that was a joke. Okay, you might not have noticed it. So let me say it again. Just to give you a fighting chance. Okay, now I watched The King's Speech. That's right. In fact, I got about an hour into the film before I realised that it's not about a peach. Yeah, now it's not a very good joke, really. So if you're not laughing, that's all right. If you are laughing, nice one. Good for you. But if you're not laughing, that's all right, because it's, you know, quite a bad joke, really. Let me explain the joke. Okay. The joke basically goes, The King's Speech. Now, if you say that quickly, The King's Speech, it sounds a bit like The King's Peach. Obviously, peach is a fruit, isn't it? The King's Peach. Yeah. The King's Speech, The King's Peach. It sounds quite similar. So, I watched the King's Speech, and I was surprised that it wasn't about a peach. I was expecting it to be about a peach. It's not really a very good joke, so never mind. Forget about it. Anyway, I saw The King's Speech. I thought it was fantastic. So if you don't know the story, basically, it's about it's a true story about King George VI, who was the King of Britain. He became the King just before the beginning of World War II. Now, basically, George VI suffered from a very, very strong stammer. A stammer is a kind of speech problem or a speech impediment, which means that you have trouble speaking easily. If you look at the Cambridge Advanced Learner's Dictionary, it says that to stammer as a verb means to speak or say something with unusual pauses or repeated sounds, either because of speech problems or because of fear and anxiety. So, for example, it's like when you go stammer like that. Thank you, for example, right? So that's to stammer. So King George VI suffered from a very bad stammer and as a result of a terrible lack of confidence. Now, in the movie, in real life, in fact, he couldn't speak in public as it caused him to stutter or stammer uncontrollably, which caused him total shame and embarrassment to everyone, to himself and to everyone. So, for example, when he addresses the public, it's a shocking and disappointing failure on a national level. At the beginning of the film, you see him trying to talk to a stadium full of people to make a very important announcement. But because of his stammer, because of his speech impediment, he can't even say a sentence without stammering a lot. And it's obviously so embarrassing and so disappointing for him and for everyone else that as a future king, that's kind of a real problem. So, and this happened in a time when people were not sympathetic to someone with speech problems. And in a king, it would have been a huge sign of weakness. He can't speak in public, and yet he has to become the king. And he's going to be the figurehead of his country when it needs him most, right at the beginning of World War II. Now, the country needed a strong king at that time in order to inspire confidence in the people in their struggle against a ruthless enemy, right? Obviously, it's very important for the country if your king, when speaking to everyone to try and inspire them to be confident, if that king has a sort of authoritative, confident, secure sounding voice. And if the king can't even string a sentence together, it's not going to do very good things for the kind of morale of the people. So this was at the time as well when radio technology had recently been introduced. Now this allowed the king to speak directly to his people in their own homes over the radio. So the importance of a clear, confident and unbroken voice was really huge. But for George VI, the prospect of even a small roomful of people caused him to stutter and stammer uncontrollably. So it would take massive courage and strength to overcome such a severe speech impediment in order to address his country's people when they needed him most. But with the help of a speech therapist whose name was Lionel Logue, he did it and he became an important voice of strength and security for the British people during the war. It was very, very difficult for him, and you see this in the movie, very, very difficult for him to deal with his lack of confidence and his speech problem. And actually, he managed to do it, and he managed to become quite an inspiration to people during the war. So it's an amazing story. Now, what you're going to listen to next is an interview with a genuine stutterer, or a stammerer. I apologise. I think stammer and stutter, although in the dictionary they're defined in the same way, I think that some people prefer to use the word stammer and others prefer to use the word stutter. Certainly the man in the interview here uses the word stammer. So let's go with that. Let's use the word stammer instead of stutter, which in the dictionary is a synonym of stammer. So we're using the word stammer. So let me just briefly tell you about the man that you're going to listen to. His name is, I believe his name is Lees Geddes. And he's on YouTube. His channel is called Speaking Out 2. I believe that he works for the British Stammering Association, which is a national charity, and it's run by people who stammer, and it's run for the benefit of anyone whose lives are affected by stammering. So it's obviously a very important charity which helps people who suffer from a stammer, and in particular they as a charity they help children who are born with stammers to overcome their problem, which then allows them to kind of operate easily in society and work, you know, in jobs and help the economy and help to have you know, fruitful lives. If you have a stammer, then that can make your life extremely difficult. So charities like the British Stammerers, the British Stammering Association, are obviously very important for people who suffer from this. So you're going to listen to this man who works for the British Stammering Association talking about the King's Speech and talking about how important this film is for the people in the world who suffer from stammers. So now, let's see. So what I've done is I've prepared some questions, and I'm going to ask you those questions in advance. So let's see. Okay. Right, so I've got 14 questions. Now, you will be able to read these questions on the website if you go to teacherluke.podomatic.com and find the relevant part of the website for this podcast. You'll be able to read these questions. So I recommend that you do that, that you have the questions with you so that you can kind of use them as a way of kind of focusing your attention on this this bit of audio that you're about to hear. So let me now just go through the questions with you. And if you can print them or look at them on the screen, that will help. But otherwise, you'll just have to try and remember the questions that I'm reading. So question one, how many high-profile stammerers have we had in the UK since George VI died in 1952? Right, it's quite a long question. How many high-profile stammerers have we had in the UK since George VI died in 1952? High-profile means kind of famous or widely known, right? So how many high-profile stammerers have we had in the UK since George VI died in 1952? Question one. Right, number two, question two. How many decent films about stammerers have there been? How many decent films about stammerers have there been? Okay, right. Now, question three. How have stammerers been shown in films? Right. How have stammerers been shown in films? Meaning, how have they been represented in movies? How have stammerers been shown in films? Question four. What does the King's Speech show people who don't stammer? Right? What does the King's Speech show people who don't stammer? So what can people who don't stammer learn from the King's Speech? What does this movie show people who don't stammer? Right? Number five, is the film historically accurate? Is the film historically accurate? So historically accurate means accurate to real history. So does it really tell the truth about what actually happened? Is it accurate in terms of its history? Is it historically accurate? So is the film historically accurate? Now, number six, what do we know about stammering now? Right? What do we know about stammering now? Okay. Question seven, was the stammer... Now, was King George VI's stammer caused by something that happened in his childhood? So was his stammer caused by something which happened in his childhood? Okay. Number eight, how did his family and staff deal with George's stammer. So his staff just means the people who worked for him. So how did his family and staff deal with George's stammer? Okay. Number nine, how did this make him feel? How did this make him feel? How did this make him feel? Okay. Number 10, with today's knowledge, what's the best way to help people with stammers? Okay. With today's knowledge, what is the best way to help people with stammers? So that's basically, with the information we know now about stammers, what's the best way to help people with stammers? Okay. Question 11, what did George the Sixth's therapist do? What did George the Sixth's therapist do, which the speaker's therapist didn't do? So we're talking about the therapist of George the Sixth and the therapist of the man speaking in the interview. So what did George's therapist do, which the interviewee's therapist didn't do? Okay. Number 12. What made George the Sixth a difficult client? What made George the Sixth a difficult client? So why was George the Sixth a difficult client for his speech therapist? Okay. Number 13. What will the King's Speech do for stammerers and non-stammerers? What will the King's Speech do for stammerers and non-stammerers? Okay. And finally, question 14. What is the danger about the near future? Okay. What's the danger about the near future? Okay. Right. So those are your 14 questions. Now you can listen to the interview with a stammerer, a man who works for a charity in support of stammerers all over the world. And he's talking about the King's Speech. Here you go.
Hello. I have a stammer. There hasn't been a really high-profile stammer in the UK since King George VI died in 1952, a very long time ago. Nor has there been a decent film featuring someone who stammers. Generally speaking, we have been shown as figures of fun. Ha-ha. As a result of this and many other inaccuracies, very few people know anything much about stammering. But now, at last, we have in the King's Speech a potentially Oscar-winning film which shows people who don't stammer how life can be if you do. And Colin Firth does an incredibly realistic job of conveying how it is to be stuck in a block with no control over your speech, part of the audience staring at you and part staring at the ground. No film has ever done that before. So it should be very helpful in terms of creating some greater understanding between stammerers and non-stammerers. But we need to remember that the action takes place about 75 years ago, so it is history. From what we know, it's a fairly realistic reenactment of what was going on at that time. Things are different now, of course. We know that stammering is a symptom of a condition in which the brain's neural circuits for speech have not wired normally. So the King would have been born with a neural propensity to stammer. It wasn't caused by some deep-rooted psychological problem. His character and behaviour would have been powerfully affected by this inability to say what he was trying to say, not vice versa. And it's quite interesting, there was a research exercise on at about the same time, which has come to be known as the Monster Study, in which a group of orphan children were cruelly encouraged to stammer. At the end of the exercise, none of them grew up stammering, but several of them developed psychological problems. Of course, speech therapy techniques have changed considerably. And when he was a child, stammering was thought to be a defect So the future king was corrected and even punished by his family and staff, which made him very self-conscious and tense about speaking, and that surely would just have made his stammering even worse. Today, where it is available, and it's not available everywhere, early intervention allows the vast majority of those very young children at risk of persistent stammering to talk fluently for the rest of their lives. Some adults do find ways to control their speech, but there is still no cure. The king continued to stammer, but as we see in the film, Loeb helped him to control his stammering when he was making formal speeches. I must say, though, that the last time I went to see a speech therapist, she didn't encourage me her to swear. But then I'm not a king, you understand. And that really is the main point of this film. It was how Lionel Loeb found a way to form a relationship with a client whose upbringing had made him reluctant to discuss anything personal. As stammerers, we are not ideally equipped to stand up and change so many misconceptions, but we need to try. The King's Speech will give stammerers and non-stammerers a kind of a permission to talk to each other. It will be the greatest opportunity I've ever seen for this often embarrassing subject to be discussed openly and on such a broad scale. So for all our sakes, please grasp it with both hands. Talk about it. But remember that the opportunity will only last for a short while. After that, there is a danger that stammering will slip back into being inaudible and invisible. We don't want that to happen. So if you feel you'd like to help, please stay tuned. But in the meantime, I'd just like to say thank you for listening.
Okay, there you are. I wonder if you noticed him stammering sometimes. Occasionally, he would struggle to produce some words. But for the most part, he was very fluent and very clear to understand, even if perhaps the recording quality wasn't perfect. But when is the recording quality ever perfect? It's not very common, and I'm sure that you'll agree that getting practice of listening to a recorded voice like that is very good practice for you as learners of English, since nowadays we communicate more and more with people through technology, using Skype or video conferencing or just on the telephone. It's obviously very good practice for you to listen to people whose voice has been recorded using technology. I think it's very good practice. You shouldn't just rely on listening to someone in kind of perfect audio conditions, because that's very rare in the real world. Okay, so did you get answers to the questions that I'd asked you about that interview? Let's see, shall we? Now, I'm going to just go through those questions and give you the answers, and we'll listen to small samples of the interview again, so that you can just double check that you understood. Okay, so the first question was, how many high-profile stammerers have we had in the UK since George VI died in 1952? Well, here is the answer.
Hello, I have a stammer. There hasn't been a really high-profile stammer in the UK since King George VI died in 1952, a very long time ago.
So the answer is there haven't been any high-profile stammerers. He said there hasn't been a high-profile stammerer in the UK since George VI died in 1952. So George VI was the last really high-profile stammerer that we've had in the UK. There's been a few celebrities here in the UK. There was a singer called Gareth Gates who had a stammer, and he famously had therapy and became a really clear speaker. But he's not that high profile, certainly not in the same league as King George VI. But now with this movie, we have, again, the subject of stammering back on the agenda in terms of in the media and in popular culture. Right, so here's the second question. How many decent films about stammerers have there been? And here is the answer.
Nor has there been a decent film featuring someone who stammers.
Nor has there been a decent film featuring someone who stammers. So the answer is that there have been no decent films about stammerers. So there you go. Nor, so he says there hasn't been anyone, there hasn't been any high profile, there haven't been any high profile stammerers in the UK since George VI, nor has there been, nor have there been any decent films about stammerers either. Okay, right. So question three is, how have stammerers been shown in movies?
Generally speaking, we have been shown as figures of fun.
Generally speaking, we have been shown as figures of fun. So figures of fun. So kind of like just basically people to laugh at. Comedy characters, figures of fun.
Ha ha. As a result of this and many other inaccuracies, very few people know anything much about stammering.
Question four, what does the King's Speech show people who don't stammer? And here is your answer.
But now at last we have in the King's Speech a potentially Oscar-winning film which shows people who don't stammer how life can be if you do.
Well, it shows people who don't stammer how life can be if you do stammer, right? So it shows people how life can be if you have a stammer, right? Which is very important. We need to know what the experiences are of people who have stammers in order to try and understand their problem and help them deal with it. Question five, is the film historically accurate? Is it historically accurate? Here's the answer.
But we need to remember that the action takes place about 75 years ago, so it is history. From what we know, it's a fairly realistic reenactment of what was going on at that time.
The answer is yes, because he says that it's a realistic reenactment of what was going on at the time. Realistic means it's like it's real. So it was a realistic reenactment. A reenactment is a when something from history is kind of played again, a reenactment. So he said it's a realistic reenactment. Question six, what do we know about stammering now? Here's the answer.
Things are different now, of course. We know that stammering is a symptom of a condition in which the brain's neural circuits for speech have not wired normally.
Yeah, so we know now that stammering is a symptom of a condition in which the brain's neural circuits for speech have not wired normally. Right, so symptom, we know, is just like one part of a one aspect of a physical problem, just like, for example, when you have a cold, a symptom would be to have a cough, right? Remember a previous podcast about being sick, being ill? Well, go back to that one and you can find lots of vocabulary about symptoms and stuff. But he said it's a symptom of a condition. A condition is a kind of, a bit like an illness, let's say, a condition in which the brain's neural circuits... So your neural circuits are basically like the sort of electrical circuits, the nerve circuits in your brain, right? So the brain's neural circuits for speech have not wired normally. So if something is wired, you know, like the way we use metal wires to connect electrical items together in our home, if they're not wired properly, or not wired normally, then those electrical products won't work in the normal way. So in this, he's saying that now we know that a stammer is caused by kind of nerve problems, electrical nerve problems in the brain, and that's what causes a stammer, right? So we know that now, but we didn't know that 75 years ago when King George VI suffered from a stammer. Question seven is, was the stammer caused by something that happened in George's childhood? Here's the answer.
So the king would have been born with a neural propensity to stammer it wasn't caused by some deep-rooted psychological problem.
So there you go, the answer was he wasn't... So his stammer wasn't caused by a deep-rooted psychological problem. If something's deep-rooted, it means the roots or the origins of that problem go very deep. Just in the way that we use the word roots to describe the parts of a tree which go under the ground. They go deep under the ground. Those are the roots. And you can also describe the roots of a problem, meaning the origins of that problem. And if a problem is deep-rooted, it means that the origins of that problem go very, very deep. So he could be talking about some kind of moment of trauma during childhood, which would then manifest itself as a speech impediment. So he's saying that that's not the case, that George VI would have been born with a physical defect in his brain, which then caused him to have speech problems. Okay, so the answer is no, it wasn't caused by something that happened in his childhood. He would have been born with the problem. Okay, so question 8 is, how did his family and staff deal with George's stammer? Here's the answer.
And when he was a child, stammering was thought to be a defect. So the future king was corrected and even punished by his family and staff.
So he was corrected and even punished. So if you're corrected, if he tried to stammer, if he tried to speak and stammered, they would then say something, no, it's, don't say it like that, don't be stupid. You know, they were very tough and harsh and strict with him because they thought that the stammer was a defect. A defect is like, something that's not working properly. They considered it basically in a negative way. They thought that there was something wrong with the boy. They weren't particularly sympathetic about it. So they would have been very harsh and strict when he stammered, which would have caused him lots of problems. So that's the next question. How did this make him feel? Well, we can probably guess the answer to that one, but here it is.
Which made him very self-conscious and tense about speaking, and that surely would just made his stammering even worse.
It would have made him feel very self-conscious and tense about speaking. Now, if you're self-conscious, it means that you're very aware of yourself. You know, like, for example, when you're standing up in front of your class, if you have to give a presentation and suddenly you feel like everyone is looking at you and you become really aware of yourself, that's to be self-conscious. It's a very uncomfortable feeling. So he would have been very self-conscious and tense about speaking. Tense just means nervous, right? Okay, so number 10, question 10. With today's knowledge, what's the best way to help people with stammers? Here is the answer.
Today, where it is available, and it's not available everywhere, early intervention allows the vast majority of those very young children at risk of persistent stammering to talk fluently for the rest of their lives.
He's saying that now we know that early intervention is the best way of helping young people to deal with stammers. So early intervention, to intervene, means to kind of... come in or to interrupt, in this case to interrupt with therapy, so to kind of become involved in the child's life at an early age and immediately start giving that child therapy in order to help them overcome the speech impediment. So early intervention would have been, early intervention is now the answer where it's available. Okay, question 11. What did George VI's therapist do, which the interviewee's therapist didn't do? Okay, and here is the answer.
I must say, though, that the last time I went to see a speech therapist, she didn't encourage me her to swear.
So the last time he went to see a speech therapist, she didn't encourage him to swear. Right, so the answer is that George's therapist encouraged him to swear. To swear means to say rude words like, you know, and shh. I'm not going to say them here, but rude words like the F word, for example. If you see the film, you'll know what I mean, because he's encouraged, the therapist encourages him to swear as a way of kind of breaking through the barrier of the stammer. And he says there in that part of the interview, he said, I must say that last time I went to see a speech therapist, she didn't encourage me to swear. So I must say, it's like a way of just saying, of just sort of emphasising what you're about to say. Well, I must say that last time I went to see a speech therapist, she didn't encourage me to swear. Right, now, question 12. What made George the Sixth a difficult client? Why was George the Sixth a difficult client? Here you go.
And that really is the main point of this film. It was how Lionel Logue found a way to form a relationship with a client whose upbringing had made him reluctant to discuss anything personal.
Yep, it's the fact that George's upbringing had made him reluctant to discuss anything personal. So because of the way he was brought up, because of the way he was raised by his parents or by his staff, as a member of the royal family, he was reluctant, meaning he didn't really want to talk about anything personal. And that made it difficult for the therapist, Lionel Logue, to kind of develop a relationship with him. Now, question number 13. What will the King's Speech do for stammerers and non-stammerers? Here's the answer, ladies and gentlemen.
The King's Speech will give stammerers and non-stammerers a kind of a permission to talk to each other. It will be the greatest opportunity I've ever seen for this often embarrassing subject to be discussed openly and on such a broad scale.
So it'll give people the permission to talk about stammering, which is important, as we've already discussed. So it'll give people permission to talk to each other. And he goes on to say, for all our sakes, please grasp it with both hands and talk about it. So to grasp something with both hands means to grab it, take it with both hands. So he's talking about use this opportunity which has been given to us by the King's Speech to kind of easily talk about the subject of stammering and the fact that it's an important subject and affects lots of people's lives. Use this opportunity, grasp it with both hands and talk about it.
So for all our sakes, please grasp it with both hands, talk about it.
And finally, question 14, what is the danger about the near future? Okay, what's the danger about the near future? Here's the answer.
But remember that the opportunity will only last for a short while. After that, there is a danger that stammering will slip back into being inaudible and invisible.
He said the danger is that after a while, this opportunity to talk about stammering will slip back and become inaudible and invisible. So it'll slip back meaning it'll sort of slip away from the public eye. It won't be such an issue anymore because kind of the release of this movie won't be news. So it'll slip back and it'll become inaudible. If something's inaudible, it means you can't hear it. And invisible means you can't see it. So as an issue, stammering will just kind of leave the public domain, the public sphere, and people will just stop talking about it. That's the worry.
We don't want that to happen. So if you feel you'd like to help, please stay tuned.
So if you feel you'd like to help, please stay tuned. Stay tuned just means keep listening. Keep listening to the subject, right? In fact, really, it means stay tuned to this man's YouTube page. His YouTube ID is Speaking Out 2. So like you said, if you do want to help, then you can kind of find out more information about the British Stammering Association. Now, if you live outside the UK and you want some advice about stammering or stuttering, or you simply want to learn more, then you can go to www.stammering.org. So that's www.stammering.org. And you can find out lots of information there. It's a very worthwhile charity, so I'm sure that if anyone was to find out more information about that and talk about it to people around the world, that would be a very good thing, wouldn't it? Okay, so that's the end of that interview. Now, I realise time is passing. Now, let's see. I'm going to teach you some phrases now. I've looked in the dictionary. I've kind of thought about useful phrases and expressions, and I've collected together a bunch of good idioms and phrases which we often use, and they all contain the word mouth. So obviously you know where your mouth is. It's on your face. It's that big hole at the bottom of your face that you use to breathe, drink, eat and talk, and a few other things, but we won't talk about those things now. There are loads of like common idioms that we use in English every day, and they involve the word mouth. So let me go through some of those with you, and I'll explain them to you as we go. So first one is me and my big mouth. God, me and my big mouth. Me and my big mouth. So you'd say that if you've said something that you shouldn't have said. It's like, oh God, me and my big mouth. Oh. So it could be, let's imagine, for example, your friends are organising a surprise party for your other friend, John, right? And they tell you, hey, Luke, we're organising a surprise party for John, OK? It's going to be on Saturday. Don't tell John. OK, and you go, oh, great, a surprise party. OK, brilliant. And you get excited. Then John comes in. You go, hey, John, I bet you can't wait for the party. And John goes, what party? What are you talking about? And you go, oh God, me and my big mouth. Ooh. Right? OK. So it's when you say something that you shouldn't have said. Right. Now, another one is to be born with a silver spoon in your mouth. To be born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Right? So, he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. If you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth, it means that you're born into a kind of rich family, or you're born into a privileged family. If you can imagine the first spoon that your parents use to feed you, if that's silver, that means obviously that your family is rich. So as a baby, you were born into a rich family. So obviously, like any king, as a prince, was born in with a silver spoon in his mouth, born into a rich family full of privilege. So King George VI would have been born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Not that that actually made life any easier for him. Obviously, he had plenty of problems. But nevertheless, he was born into a rich family full of privilege. So he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Right? Now, let's see. Here's another one. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Right? Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. So that would be like, okay, someone, like, let's say your uncle says to you, hey Luke, do you want my car? You know, I'm not using it anymore. Why don't you have the car? And you're thinking to yourself, oh God, I don't want this car because it's a total wreck. It uses loads of fuel. It's really like a really bad quality car, but then you think, oh well, I shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth. I should just accept it because, you know, it's worth something. It's like worth a few thousand pounds, and I could use it to like drive to the supermarket. So you shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth. Basically, it just means that you shouldn't. If you're given a gift, or if you're given something for free, you shouldn't question it too much. Like, if someone's offering to give you something for free, you shouldn't say, oh, well, no, I'm not sure about the quality of that. You shouldn't check the quality of it or complain about the quality of it. You should just accept it as a gift. And it comes from the times when people had horses a lot in this country. And it a way of checking the health or quality of a horse would be to check its teeth. So you look in its mouth to check if it's good. So if you can imagine purchasing a horse, the first thing you do would be to check its teeth to see if it's good. Now, if someone gave you a horse for free, you wouldn't, before you accepted it, you wouldn't look in its mouth to check that it was a good quality horse. You'd just say, oh, thanks very much for the horse. I'd gladly accept it. Thank you. So it comes from that idea. If someone's offering you something free, you shouldn't really kind of examine it carefully for its quality. You should just accept it as a free gift. So don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth, right? So another one is to live from hand to mouth. If you're living from hand to mouth, it means you're literally just surviving on a day-to-day basis. So, for example, if you know the money that you make, you just sort of spend that money immediately just to survive, then you're living from hand to mouth. It could be used to refer to, let's say, people who are living in poverty. It just means that they spend any money they have immediately on like basic needs such as food without being able to save any money. So the idea is that you're not able to save any money. Like, for example, you could say, there's no way we can even think about travelling to Europe this year as we are literally living from hand to mouth, a hand to mouth existence. You can imagine kind of like, as a farmer, you might live from hand to mouth. If you grow some food and literally pick the food out of the ground and transfer it from your hand to your mouth. So you're living from hand to mouth. You're just living on the money you have without being able to save anything. You're living from hand to mouth. Okay. Another one is melt in your mouth. Melt in your mouth. So if something melts in your mouth, to melt, that's what ice does when it becomes water, right? So if something melts in your mouth, you'd use that expression to describe food which is soft and very good to eat. So you might say, oh, in this restaurant, it's fantastic. They serve steaks that just melt in your mouth, right? So obviously that's like a really delicious tender steak because it just melts in your mouth. You can imagine a kind of soft, juicy, tender steak that just, it almost becomes like a kind of liquid when it goes in your mouth. It melts in your mouth. So it melts in your mouth, right? Okay, next one is put your money where your mouth is. Put your money where your mouth is. So you'd tell someone to put their money where their mouth is. If, for example, they're talking about something that they think, let's say, okay, let's say if you think that Manchester United are going to win the game, you would say, okay, put your money where your mouth is. That means kind of like bet, make a bet on it. So basically it means to show that you really mean what you say by actually doing something or giving money rather than just talking about it. For example, the government talks about helping disabled people, but doesn't put its money where its mouth is. So the government talks about helping disabled people, but it never actually does anything to help them. So you might say to a politician, come on, if you really believe what you say about wanting to help disabled people, put your money where your mouth is and do something about it. Okay, so that's to put your money where your mouth is. Put your money where your mouth is and do something. Don't just talk about it, actually do it. Put your money where your mouth is, right? Let's see. Then, of course, you've got shut your mouth. Shut your mouth, which is like shut up. Shut your mouth. Or you can say keep your mouth shut, meaning don't say anything, right? Obviously a little bit rude. Shut your mouth. Keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut, you. Shut it. Shut up. Keep your mouth shut. right? Shut your mouth, right? Right. So here's another one: to leave a bad taste in your mouth. To leave a bad taste in your mouth. So if something leaves a bad taste in your mouth, then it, first of all, it could be used to describe food. So if you eat some food which tastes really bad, you'd say that it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. The bad taste stays in your mouth, right? So if something leaves a bad taste in your mouth, so that's for food. But also we can use leave a bad taste in your mouth to describe how you feel after an experience. So you could say, oh, that really left a bad taste in my mouth. So, for example, the idea that the money had been stolen from her sick mother left a nasty taste in the mouth. When you see someone being treated so unkindly, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Or, for example, you could say, that argument left a really bad taste in my mouth. So an experience that kind of makes you feel bad afterwards, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Another one is watch your tongue. Watch your tongue or watch your mouth. Watch your tongue or watch your mouth. And that means be careful what you're saying. Watch your tongue, you. You've got to be careful what you're saying around here because people are listening. So watch your mouth. Don't say anything you shouldn't say. Watch your mouth. Another one is by word of mouth. Word of mouth. By word of mouth. So, for example, the popularity of this movie really spread by word of mouth. So something spreads by word of mouth. It just means that people are telling each other. It's spread by word of mouth. It just means that people are telling each other rather than reading about it in publicity or reading about it in the newspaper. They're just telling each other. So, for example, popularity of the King's Speech really spread by word of mouth because everyone who saw it would then tell their friends and they would tell their friends and it really spread by word of mouth. Okay, you can put words into somebody's mouth. There's another one. Don't put words in my mouth, or you're putting words in my mouth. I didn't say that. If you put words in someone's mouth, it means that you're kind of suggesting that someone has said something that they didn't really say. So it would be like someone saying, you're putting words in my mouth. I didn't really mean that. I didn't mean to say that. So to put words in someone's mouth. That's it for the word mouth. Let's move on to the word tongue. Obviously, you know the word tongue. That's the muscle in your mouth, which you use it to make different sounds. Let's have a few tongue expressions. T-O-N-G-U-E. I'm finding it in the dictionary, ladies and gentlemen. T-O-N-G-U-E, yeah. Right, so bite your tongue. To bite your tongue means to stop saying something. I really bit my tongue, meaning I stopped saying something. I had to bite my tongue to stop saying it, you know. Like maybe in the wedding, you know, in a wedding ceremony, there's always that moment where the priest says, if anyone here wishes to say anything or to, what does he say? Something like, if anyone here has something they wish to say before the marriage vows take place, then this is your opportunity to say it. And he'd say, when he said that, I really had to bite my tongue. I didn't want to say anything about the fact that he didn't really love her. So I had to bite my tongue. So it's when you prevent yourself from saying something, bite your tongue. Another one is, what's the matter? Has the cat got your tongue? What's the matter? Cat got your tongue? Has the cat got your tongue? That means, basically, if someone suddenly isn't able to say anything, if someone suddenly is quiet, for example, like during an argument, someone suddenly doesn't say anything. You say, what's the matter, huh? Cat got your tongue? So it's like a way of saying, why aren't you saying anything? Why are you being so quiet? Has the cat stolen your tongue? Pretty stupid expression, really. But people do say it quite a lot. Let's see. Your mother tongue. Obviously, your mother tongue means your first language. So, like, you know, Spanish is her mother tongue. English is his mother tongue. Another one is probably the final one for this episode is when you say, when you can't remember the word, or you're trying to remember something, but you can't quite remember it, it's on the tip of my tongue. It's on, if there's something you're trying to remember, it's like, what's that word? Ah, I can't remember. It's on the tip of my tongue. So when you can't remember something, you can say, it's on the tip of my tongue. Quite a good expression for learners of English, that. Whenever you can't remember a word, you'd say, what's that word? It's on the tip of my tongue. But you have to remember the expression, on the tip of my tongue. So I guess maybe it doesn't really help you that much. But it's a good expression. People do say it quite a lot. Right, so that's it. That's 55 minutes, over 55 minutes of podcast action for you, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening. I hope that's been useful. And you can look forward to the next episode, which is going to be about another movie called 127 Hours. So you can look forward to that. Thanks again for listening. And thank you very much if you've donated recently. I appreciate it very much. You're making this podcast happen. All the best to you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a very nice day, morning, night, evening, lunch, dinner, breakfast, whatever you're doing, wherever you are. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening all the way to the end of this episode of Luke's English Podcast. If you have listened all the way through, then you're a fantastic, wonderful, and extremely brilliant person. Well done, you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.